We're going to be looking at this great text in the Gospel of Mark. But to get us into this text, I thought first of all we would hear from Martin Luther King Jr. And this is holy stuff. Listen to these words. To our most bitter opponents, we say, we shall match your capacity to inflict suffering by our capacity to endure suffering. We shall meet your physical force with soul force. Do to us what you will, and we will continue to love you. Throw us in jail, and we shall still love you. Send your hooded perpetrators of violence into our community at the midnight hour and beat us and leave us half dead, and we shall still love you. But be ye assured that we will wear you down by our capacity to suffer. One day we shall win freedom, but not only for ourselves. We shall so appeal to your heart and conscience that we shall win you in the process, and our victory will be a double victory. Well, when I first encountered those words, they bowled me over. I was overwhelmed with them, particularly the line about the hooded perpetrators coming into our community at the midnight hour, and even when that happens, we will still love you. So I hear these words, and I am overwhelmed by them, but at the same time, I'm inspired by them. And I say, yes, I want to love, but I'm not sure I want to love like that. I'm just not sure about this. This seems almost beyond reach, these words of Martin Luther King. Well, the words themselves were inspired by Jesus Christ. They were inspired by passages such as the one we're going to look at today. And so perhaps this passage then, this great, amazing text, particularly the first verse we're going to look at, can work its way into our hearts, and so we can be inspired too in this manner, with this kind of love, to love people in our lives and the people in our world in this way. So turn with me, if you will, to Mark chapter 8, 34. That's where we're going to begin today. We're going to be looking probably about half our time spending in one verse, Mark 8, 34, but then we're going to broaden out and look at the rest of the passage. And where we pick up the story, Jesus has just spoken about his mission to his disciples, and he has told them that his mission is going to involve suffering and death. This has shocked his disciples, and Peter has voiced this shock for the sake of all of the disciples. So Jesus has already done that with the disciples, and now what he wants to do is he wants to teach them about following him. And not only teach his disciples, but there are other people present for this particular teaching. And so we learn then how to follow Jesus, what's involved in following Jesus, by listening to what he says about following Jesus in this passage. So Mark chapter 8, verse 34. Then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, "If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." If anyone wants to follow Jesus, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. So Jesus, first of all, talks about taking up the cross. And what does this mean? In order for us to understand what this means in our context today, we have to go back and understand what it meant in the context of first century Palestine. The cross in that world was a political statement. Rome was in charge. Rome dominated Palestine, and the Jews were a subject people. And how does Rome stay in power? By power. And one of the ways that Rome stays in power is through the means of execution. You execute rebels. You execute those who take issue with your right to rule. You execute rebels, revolutionaries, and brigands. And for Rome, the means of execution was crucifixion. So crucifixion was not only a means of execution, it was a political statement. It said to the Jews, you are a subject people, we are in charge, and you're not. So for the Jews of the day, for the Jewish nationalists of the day, the cross was a bitter pill to swallow. It was a bitter symbol. It reminded them constantly that they were a subject people, and the land was littered with these crosses when Rome would crucify folks who took issue with Rome's right to rule. So this was very difficult for the Jews of the day. So if you were a Jewish nationalist and someone comes along who you think might be the Christ, and remember, Peter has just confessed that Jesus is the Christ, what would you expect to take up in order to follow the Christ? You might expect to take up exactly what Peter ended up taking up. He would take up a sword. And this is what Peter took up in the garden, right? He takes up the sword, whereupon Jesus has to say, those who take up the sword will perish by the sword. Exactly the same word here, take up. You're going to take up the cross, or you're going to take up the sword. So for Jewish nationalists, the answer to that question was clear. They were ready to take up a sword. So how would you interpret these words of Jesus when he talks about taking up a cross? Well, if you had this particular mindset, the mindset of a Jewish nationalist, you might think that Jesus is saying, we are going in to rebel against Rome. We are going to take up our swords. And in order to do that, many of you are going to have to take up your crosses. Many of you are going to have to be crucified. And when you were crucified, what you would do oftentimes is you were forced to carry your own crossbeam to the site of execution. So some people might have thought that Jesus was challenging them, says, we're going to rebel against Rome, and what you're going to have to do is to risk everything, and some of you are going to be crucified. Or does he mean that we're going to rebel against Rome, and what we're going to do is we're going to take up these crosses, we're going to take up these bloody crosses, and we're going to get rid of them. We're going to take them up and take them away. The word that is translated take up can also be translated take away. So this is not, of course, what Jesus means, but this is the way he might have been interpreted in that day with the particular mindset of the Jews of the day. Well, Jesus, of course, is not interested in any of these things, and he means something else entirely because he is not interested in taking on Rome. He is not interested in taking on the superpower of the day. He is interested in taking on the superpower of the ages, who is Satan himself. The one who is behind Rome, the one who is influencing the Jews in this nationalist agenda, this very pagan-like nationalist agenda. Jesus is after a bigger foe. And in order to take on that foe, in order to take on Satan, you don't take up a sword, you put on self-giving love. And how does this work? Well, think about it. The world does evil to you, what do? You do evil to the world. You hate the world. You hate those who hate you. If this evil comes your way, if anger and malice comes your way, if swords come your way, if arrows come your way, you retaliate. This is the way of the world. Jesus is not going to work that way. He's going to take up his cross, and he is not going to retaliate. He's going to take all of this into himself. He's going to draw evil into himself and not retaliate. And what does he do? Takes it out of circulation. This is how evil stays in circulation. You do evil to me, I do evil to you. You send your suicide bombers to me, I send my tanks to you. You send your malice toward me, I send it right back to you. And on it goes. This is Satan's game to get us drawn into a never-ending circle of violence. If only the violence that takes root in our own hearts. Jesus instead says, put on love. Take up your cross, which means put on love. Draw evil unto yourself. Let it exhaust itself in you. We might think of what Paul says in Romans chapter 12, verse 17. Paul says this, do not repay anyone evil for evil. And then he says also in verse 21, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. That is very consistent with what it means to take up your cross. So Jesus says, first of all, that you must deny yourself. What does this mean? It means relinquishing your right to define what your life looks like. It means letting go of your vision and trusting someone else with that vision, namely Jesus. And oftentimes we have a little help along the way in this, in that our visions fail. It doesn't take very long for most of us to walk down our paths in life before we come into roadblocks. Before we realize that our vision for life isn't succeeding very well. So that's the kind of thing that oftentimes persuades us to release our visions, to relinquish our visions, and to trust Jesus. And the scriptures tell us that Jesus is trustworthy. Oftentimes, what happens in our failure is that we realize that we are not trustworthy. We cannot be trusted to articulate the vision for our lives. Why? You don't know yourself well enough. You don't know the world well enough. You don't know the future well enough. You don't know the future at all. But Jesus does. He says, follow me. Deny yourself. Let go of your vision. Let me articulate it for you. Let me lead you. So in order to take up our cross, first of all, we have to put away the sword. What does that mean? It means put away anger. It means put away malice. Put away revenge. Put away bitterness. Put away that thing within you that wants to strike back at a world that has hurt and injured and wounded you. Put that away. Put that sword away. How do you do that? Well, you don't deny the pain. You can't live for very long in life without experiencing pain and rejection and so forth. What do you do? Well, I would say that you take up the Psalms. Instead of taking up the sword, you take up the Psalms, especially the Psalms of Lament. The Psalms of Lament are this great gift to the church, which allow us to express our anger in everything that is in our hearts to God in order that we might pour out that which is within us in order to receive a different vision, in order to receive a new perspective. So you don't deny the anger, you don't deny the pain, you deal with it, you feel it, and you channel it, and the Psalms of Lament give us the opportunity to do that, and then to receive a new perspective, and then to take up your cross, then to put on self-giving love. And this is what Jesus did, because he owned Psalm 22, this incredible masterpiece of a work of David that put together this incredible psalm, this Psalm of Lament. And there are 17 references in the New Testament to Psalm 22 in connection with the crucifixion narratives of Jesus. 17 times Psalm 22 is alluded to in the story of Jesus' crucifixion. He makes it his psalm. He has lamented. He's gone through this lament. And then famously, he quotes the first line from Psalm 22 on the cross, where he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? And when he quotes that first line from the psalm, it opens up the entire psalm for us. And we know that this has been his psalm, that he has lamented. And that's how he's able to put away the sword and the anger and the malice and to put on self-giving love on that cross. Amazing. So we take up our cross. What does this mean? It means to practice self-giving love. You practice self-giving love. Now, you don't necessarily need to add to your life to do this. You don't need to add to your schedule. A lot of people think, oh no, he's going to make me do something else here. I don't have the time for all of this. I'm not asking you to add to your schedule. Just practice self-giving love in small, practical ways with the people who are already in your life. Your family, your housemates, your coworkers, the people who are around you. Just practice in small ways self-giving love with them. Make small decisions, often small, hard decisions, self-sacrificial decisions, but this sets a pattern for your life. If you start making these small decisions, one decision after another, you are setting a pattern for your life that enables you to make the big decisions when those big decisions come, those big decisions to take up your cross, to lay down your life. Think about Jesus once again. What did he do? Did he just appear out of nowhere in the Garden of Gethsemane? He made it to the Garden of Gethsemane by walking in the way of the Lord one step at a time. From Galilee to Jerusalem, he walked. He put one foot in front of the other, knowing that it was going to be hard once he got there, but making those small decisions along the way. So when the time came, when he came to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray that awesome prayer, Abba, Father, not my will, but your will be done, he was ready to pray that prayer. And so if you make these small, little, hard decisions in your life, they may eventually lead you to your own Gethsemane, and you will then be ready to pray a prayer like that, and you'll be ready to make the hard decision to take up your cross. But take up your cross in all sorts of small, little ways until that time. Set that pattern. Last week in our house, we scheduled a special trash pickup, which meant that I was going to have to haul about an hour's worth of trash out to our curb. We've moved about a year ago, and we haven't really cleaned everything out, so this is going to be a major undertaking. Now, taking out the trash is not one of my favorite activities. It doesn't line up there with a list of one of my favorite things to do, or it doesn't even seem to be any kind of significant thing to do. What does taking out the trash have to do with the gospel? It's not as significant as sharing the gospel, but I thought to myself as I was starting to do this, okay, with this passage rumbling around in my mind, okay, I'm going to do this for the gospel. I'm going to do this for my family. I'm going to serve Christ in this way by serving my family and taking out the trash. Well, in the course of taking out the trash, I had some very large items, and I knocked on my neighbor's door and asked him to help me. And there was this really large thing that we had to carry out, and so he helped me carry it out, and he helped me do the rest of the garbage. And so it went in about a half hour instead of an hour. But in the course of all of this, somehow, and I don't know how, we got involved in a spiritual discussion. And somehow, I don't know how I just ended up sharing the gospel with him. Moral of the story: take out the trash for the sake of the gospel, and you might end up sharing the gospel. It's small, little decisions that seem like they're often mundane, but they are charged with the presence of God, charged with the grandeur of God. If you understand them and can connect them to the gospel, it makes life worth living. It gives meaning to the mundane, because the mundane isn't mundane. Well, and then you might consider entering some place of pain in your world. That's ultimately what Jesus did in going to the cross. He went to the greatest place of pain in history, where all the pain of the world was gathered, that little hill outside Jerusalem, when he went to the cross. He went to a place of pain. So, in your world, where's there pain? And again, you might not have to go anywhere else but what's already in your world to realize and to recognize, where are people hurting? Where is their pain? And maybe I can enter into that pain, and I don't know what to do, but I'm going to take with me the love of Christ. I'm going to walk forward into that pain. Bring with me the love of Christ. That's putting on self-giving love. That's taking up your cross. On a practical level, you might consider engaging in some sort of ministry as we start up our ministries again in the fall. Oftentimes around here, the fall is kind of where we push the reset button and restart things. And so that's going to happen in the fall. You might be thinking in advance and praying in advance, well, how might I be involved in serving in my spiritual community in terms of self-giving love? And it is often in your spiritual community where this is really worked out, where you really learn about self-giving love, where you really learn about taking up your cross. Small little decisions in your spiritual community. Well, what if you take up your cross, if you move forward in self-giving love, and that love is spurned? It happens, doesn't it? It's going to happen, I promise you. You are not going to be accepted the way you want to be accepted all the time when you move forward in self-giving love. You're going to get rejected, and it's going to hurt. What are you going to do then? Well, don't try to deflect the pain. Don't try to deny the pain. Embrace the pain. Let the pain do its work. Let the sword and the arrows of that pain take you right into the heart of Jesus. And in the heart of Jesus, you will be formed and shaped. And you will be able to let go of your vision, and you will be able to receive His vision. You will be able to take up your cross. So instead of worrying about rejection, instead of trying to avoid it, now don't go searching for it, it's just going to happen. But when it comes your way, use it to your advantage. Let it do its work. I have wondered lately about myself. Sometimes I wonder about myself. But I have wondered where I would be today if I had received all of the acceptance and all of the validation that I have craved in my life, particularly in my younger years, and I didn't get. I've wondered where I would be. And here's my conclusion. I don't think I would be as close to Jesus as I am. Because I did not get what I want, I had to go to Jesus for that. And that has taken me to a deeper place with Jesus, where I have learned painfully and joyously to let go of my vision and to embrace the vision of Jesus. And I think because I've been rejected in life, that has more lined me up with the vision of Jesus for my life. So when rejection happens, when you move forward in self-giving love, let rejection do its work. Well, let's clear up some misconceptions about what it means to take up your cross. Does taking up your cross mean that you let everybody do everything they want to you? In modern language, do you become an enabler for others' self-destructive behavior? Do you become codependent? By no means. Think about Jesus. Once again, every time you think about this stuff, think about Jesus. How does he relate to his enemies? Well, he was grieved at their hardness of heart. We see that earlier in the Gospel of Mark. He looks at the Pharisees and all of the way they're living and the way they are opposing him, and he is grieved. He loves them. He is grieved for their hardness of heart. But he also uses very strong words. He provokes them with his words. He uses harsh words. So, strong words and noncompliance often go hand in hand with self-giving love. But you have to walk with Jesus to let him form you and shape you to know when it is you should speak and how you should speak and how you can move forward and when strong words are called for and when to hold your tongue. Well, another misconception we want to clear up is that this is absolutely impossible. A lot of people look at this verse and say, this is impossible. I cannot take up my cross. I have the sense that I'm supposed to be loving, but what I feel in my heart is that I'm loving enough. This is what so many people say today. They don't say it. They think it and they believe it and they feel it deep in their hearts. I'm not loving enough. And therefore, they look at a verse like this and this brings on all sorts of guilt. What they are doing is they are not actually taking up their cross. They are taking up a load of expectations. And they are bearing a load of expectations, carrying around the expectations of those around them, and even false expectations that they project onto those around them. They think that people have all sorts of expectations for them, and so this goes deep into their hearts, and they never get around to actually practicing self-giving love. They're really just trying to live up to expectations. Out of guilt, they are trying to live up to expectations. Again, let's clear this up by looking at the life of Jesus. One of the big questions, of course, today is what would Jesus do? Well, I ask what Jesus didn't do. What didn't he do? He didn't do everything. But to have all that power, apparently, to do all that healing, and not to heal everybody, not to fix the world, well, he went to one town, he healed some people, they were desperate for him to heal some more, and what does he say? Let's go someplace else now. Let's leave all those sick people back there. Huh? Well, how do we understand Jesus this way? He knew what he was about. How does he know what he's about? Through his study of the scriptures, he knows the scriptures, and through prayer. He gives attention to the scriptures, and he gives attention to prayer, and he's able to discern that which is congruent with his mission and that which he can let go of. So, brothers and sisters, give attention to the scriptures and give attention to prayer. Let Jesus form you and shape you for his mission in the world. And do something. Don't be paralyzed by this. Do something. And if you don't know what to do, and if you've prayed about it, you've studied the scriptures, if you don't know what to do, do something. And the Lord will lead you. So why is it we should take up our cross? Let's look at Mark 8:35 through 9:1. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me and for the gospel will save it. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world yet forfeit his soul? Or what can a man give in exchange for his soul? If anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. And he said to them, I tell you the truth, some who are standing here will not taste death before they see the kingdom of God come with power. Now, the word that is translated life can also be translated soul, and that is the word that dominates this particular explanation. I would prefer one translation all the way through in order to understand that Jesus here is talking about the same thing. I would prefer the translation life, because this goes back to what the Jews understood life to be. It goes back to Deuteronomy 30. It goes back to the covenant. And the word life is all over Deuteronomy 30, and this was the covenant, this was the partnership that God makes with his people, and this partnership was almost defined as life itself, so that the command comes to the Jews, choose life, choose this covenant, choose this relationship with God, choose this partnership with God, which has to do with impacting the world, because you partner with God to do something. Not simply just to know God, and God called the Jews apart, separate, to be in partnership with him, to be the light to the nations. Well, if you turn your back on this, if you turn your back on Jesus' definition of life, partnership with God, and you instead pursue your own ambitions, for the Jews, that would mean oftentimes, look, think about it, okay? You could get the whole world. They could get the whole, if they could succeed, they could get the whole world. What did they really want? They just wanted Palestine. The Jewish nationalists just wanted the Romans out of Palestine. And Jesus says, you could gain the whole world. You could have what Rome has. You could succeed in that. If you could succeed beyond your wildest dreams, it still wouldn't be worth it. Because it would cost you something. The cost would be too great. What's it going to cost you? Your life. Your partnership with God. You would be forfeiting everything that goes with that, including your vocation, which is to be the light of the world. You'd just like give up who you're supposed to be. So that's what Jesus is saying to the people of his day. And as incentive, he talks about the coming of the Son of Man. Now, we have to do a little bit of work in the Old Testament to understand what Jesus is talking about regarding the coming of the Son of Man. He is not talking about the so-called second coming, as is often conceived from these verses. He is talking about things involved in his first coming. And let me show you this from Daniel chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. The prophet Daniel has this vision from God, and here's how he describes it. In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days. He goes up to the Ancient of Days. So it's not as a coming down, it's a going up. And was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All peoples, nations, and men of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. So Daniel is talking about the Son of Man, that is the representative of God's people, going up to the Ancient of Days, that is God, and receiving an everlasting kingdom. Jesus says that there are some who are present here who will not taste death until they see this happen. What does this mean? It's all wrapped up in the first coming of Jesus, culminating in his resurrection and his ascension to the right hand of the Father, where he receives this kingdom, and he is now in authority over all the world as its resurrected Lord. Jesus says for these people, this is about to happen. So that brings upon them a sense of urgency. If this is really going to happen, I better listen to Jesus' words, in other words. For us, it already has happened. Jesus has come into his kingdom. Now we are still waiting for the second coming, in which he is going to consolidate his reign, and he is going to establish his kingdom. So we are still waiting for that, but he is already the now enthroned king of the world. Therefore, submit to him. So for us, we can succeed with our vision for life beyond our wildest dreams. I mean, it's possible. Some people do that. They get everything they want. But even when you do, it's going to cost you something. The cost is too great. The cost is too much. It costs you your life. It costs you your partnership with God. It costs you your true vocation. So today, Jesus invites people to embrace him and his words, but you can, if you want, turn your back on him. It's up to you. It's very simple here. If you're ashamed of him, meaning you turn your back on him, you willfully want nothing to do with him, you want nothing to do with crosses, you want to go your own way, you can do that. But Jesus is going to turn his back on you when you see him face to face at the end of the age. You won't be able to see him face to face. And we might ask ourselves, if we have spent our entire lives willfully opposing Jesus, willfully not wanting to take up our crosses, not wanting to deny ourselves and to pursue our own vision, how is it that when Jesus comes back to establish his reign, we will even be able to want to be with him? See? So, why is it that you should take up your cross? It's because you can save your life. In reality, you let Jesus save your life. But here's the way he words it. You can save your life. You can save yourself. You can save all of what you are supposed to be. You can become what you are supposed to be. And this is what you know deep in your heart. There is something in your heart that is very deep that you want to be something, and somehow this idea of self-giving love and having a purpose that resonates with you. So you become nothing more or less than what you are supposed to be, which at some level is what you want to be. You want to be this person. You want to take up your cross. You want to practice self-giving love. And what are you doing when you take up your cross? What are you doing when you practice self-giving love? You are participating in the kingdom of God. You are participating in this world. You are participating in the awesome purposes of God to vanquish evil and to finally and ultimately establish His reign on earth. That's what you're doing. The dimensions of this are absolutely cosmic. Small, little decisions to practice self-giving love, the dimensions of this are absolutely cosmic because you are participating in the establishment of the kingdom of God. Now I ask you, do you have a better vision than that? What was it you wanted again? What was it you were pursuing? Maybe something a lot less than the kingdom of God. Frederick Buechner talks about the time when he was in his 20s, and he's a great writer. I've finally encountered him a little bit and read some of his works. And he talks about the time when he was in his 20s. He visited his mother's apartment, and there he received a phone call from a friend. And this friend said he was waiting at the airport because he had just heard that his mother and his father and his pregnant sister had been in a bad car accident and might not make it. So the friend was at the airport waiting to catch this plane in order to go and be with his family. And the phone call came to Frederick Buechner asking him, would you just come and sit with me at the airport until the plane leaves? I just need somebody to sit with me at the airport. Well, Buechner said, let me call you back in about 10 minutes. And all this fear, a lot of it from his past, came up and he didn't want to go. He was absolutely terrified of going to the airport and sitting with his friend. But he determined, okay, I'm going to go. Well, when the call came back 10 minutes later, it turned out that the friend had composed himself and Buechner did not have to go to the airport. But now, as an older man, he looks back on that episode and he shares these reflections. And this is a long quote, but he's such a good writer. Just take these words in. My mother's apartment by candlelight was haven and home and shelter from everything in the world that seemed dangerous and a threat to my peace. And my friend's broken voice on the phone was a voice calling me into that dangerous world, not simply for his sake, as I suddenly saw it, but also for my sake. The shattering revelation of that moment was that true peace, the high and bidding peace that passeth all understanding, is to be had not in retreat from the battle, but only in the thick of battle. To journey for the sake of saving our own lives is little by little to cease to live in any sense that really matters, even to ourselves, because it is only by journeying for the world's sake, even when the world bores and sickens and scares you half to death, that little by little we start to come alive. It was not a conclusion that I came to in time. It was a conclusion from beyond time that came to me. It was a gift from God. God knows I have never been any good at following the road it pointed to, but at least by grace I glimpsed the road and saw that it is the only one worth traveling. So upon reflection, he realizes that this phone call came from his friend, not only for his friend's sake, but for his own sake. And notice Jesus' appeal here. Ultimately, it's in this text, it's to save your life, to let Jesus save your life. So we embrace the words of Jesus for our own sakes. Why? Because we want to save ourselves. We want to let Jesus save ourselves. In Buechner's words, you come alive. It's because we want to come alive. And haven't you experienced enough deadness in your life? Going through the motions, turning the crank, the mundane is just the mundane. The love is a duty that has no real charge in it, no joy. You want to come alive. And Buechner concludes that this road of self-giving love, is the only road worth traveling. And isn't that the truth? And haven't you tried a bunch of other roads? And isn't this the only one that is worth traveling. So you want to come alive. And this, brothers and sisters, is what the world needs. It needs you and me and all of us to come alive. To not simply be turning the spiritual cranks, to not simply be going to our Bible studies and saying those are nice words, to not simply be coming here on a Sunday morning and going, oh, that was a nice sermon, or not, that was nice music, or not. It needs men and women, boys and girls to come alive. It needs this church to come alive. And it's only going to come alive if we embrace these words from Jesus, if we let these words from Jesus into our hearts, if we really make it a determination in our lives to practice in small ways and then ultimately in big ways, self-giving love. You do it, you take up your cross, you practice self-giving love because you want to, because you need to come alive. How do you come alive? In the most paradoxical of ways, by taking up your cross. So are you clinging to a vision for your life that really isn't going anywhere? Are you just longing and hungering for power and validation and success and possessions and success, however you define it, or something to come in to say that you're all right? And is something like that what you're aiming for? Are you fighting, in other words, the wrong battles? Are you taking on the wrong foes? Well, you have a bigger battle to fight, and that's the battle against evil. That's the battle against the evil one himself. And you can only fight that battle by taking up your cross and by putting on self-giving love. Practice self-giving love. Why? Because at some level, it appeals to you. It resonates with you. Because at some level, you recognize this is what you want to do. This is what you want to be. This is what you're supposed to be. Because the words of Martin Luther King at the beginning of this message inspire you. Because the words of Jesus, which themselves inspired Martin Luther King, inspire you. Because you want to come alive. Let's finish where we started. Martin Luther King. Love is the most durable power in the world. This creative force, so beautifully exemplified in the life of our Christ, is the most potent instrument available in mankind's quest for peace and security. Napoleon Bonaparte, the great military genius, looking back over his years of conquest, what a vision, his years of conquest, is reported to have said, Alexander, Caesar, Charlemagne, and I have built great empires. But upon what did they depend? They depended on force. But centuries ago, Jesus started an empire that was built on love. And even to this day, millions will die for him. Now King again. Who can doubt the veracity of these words? The great military leaders of the past have gone, and their empires have crumbled and burned to ashes. But the empire of Jesus, built solidly and majestically on the foundation of love, is still growing. Think about a way this week that you can participate in the empire of Jesus by practicing self-giving love. Think about a way that you can do something for the sake of love that costs you something this week if it only costs you 5 minutes.